from KPFK Pacifica Radio. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The past two decades have seen their fair share of close presidential election races, including the 2000 and 2016 races, where Republicans narrowly prevailed. But one extremely close and historic presidential race, which shifted the political landscape for a generation, was the 1960 election of Senator John F. Kennedy, who beat candidate Vice President Richard Nixon by a razor-thin margin. Pivotal to the outcome of that race was an October surprise involving the incarceration of none other than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Telling the story of how the freeing of Dr. King swept black voters toward a Democratic president in a new book are my guests, the father and son team of Stephen Kendrick and Paul Kendrick. Their earlier books include Douglas and Lincoln, How a Revolutionary Black Leader and a Reluctant Liberator Struggled to End Slavery and Save the Union, as well as Sarah's Long Walk, The Free Blacks of Boston and How Their Struggle for Equality Changed America. You now join me to discuss their new book, 9 Days, The Race to Save Martin Luther King Jr.'s Life and Win the 1960 Election. Welcome to the program, Paul and Stephen.
It's good to be here.
Thank you so much.
So first, let's talk about who these two, what was the reason around Dr. King's incarceration, this particular incarceration, and the one that changed the outcome of the 1960 race was the first time that the civil rights icon was arrested. Why was he arrested and what did he face?
We wanted to tell a story that helps us understand how King became the monumental figure that we remember. And so this story is how during the year when sit-ins were exploding all over the South, how Atlanta black college students really pressured King, who had just moved home to Atlanta. He'd had the success in Montgomery, and then he was trying to figure out, how am I going to change a nation the way that I changed Montgomery? And students really asked him to do a sit-in with them in downtown Atlanta and go to jail with them. And it was for King, and some survivors of this time helped us understand this and helped us tell the story. For him, going to jail, facing down death, was how he was able to then go on to Birmingham and Selma and make the national changes that he did.
And his incarceration,
you know, King was only 31 years old, so he wasn't that much older than the students, but he was a bit of a monumental figure to them, and he'd been on the cover of Time magazine, but he was not the figure of King that we recognize from Selma and Birmingham, who has become a legend since. This is really, in a funny kind of way, an origin story. So yeah, he had to accept the students' radical notion of jail, no bail. And so this would be the first time that Martin Luther King went to prison.
So he experienced a very serious incarceration. Tell me about the conditions of the prison that he was held in and why it was that eventually many worried that he might face death in prison.
So he had an earlier traffic ticket. He'd been racially profiled, and because he didn't have a Georgia license yet, he'd had a suspended sentence. And so he does this sit-in, but then the judge from the next-door county, DeKalb County, gets him and uses that as an excuse to sentence him to 4 months hard labor in Georgia State Prison in Reidsville. And
this is for a $25 traffic ticket.
Yeah. And we found some very interesting stuff in our research about just within that month, prisoners at Reidsville had been smuggling out petitions about the sadistic conditions that they were in there. There had been murders in Reidsville. Later, there would be lawsuits about the conditions there. And so King's father was really justifiably scared that this was a place where King's enemies could get him killed. And then King would be a kind of a footnote in history had he not survived these 9 days But part of that race of how he gets out is not just the presidential campaigns, but his lawyer and his family and the student activists in Atlanta who were all, who, you know, expected to sit in and go to jail in Atlanta, but instead they're someone they admired and loved so much, whose life was suddenly in grave danger, hours away from Atlanta in the rural part of Georgia in the state prison.
The research that we did really filled out the picture of this larger community that supported and helped save King. When historians have previously described this, often it's just a paragraph or two in a campaign volume, they often concentrate on the call that JFK made to Coretta, and that was indeed very, very important. And a call that Bobby Kennedy, the campaign manager, later made to the judge. We cover this exhaustively, and I think with some new additions to the historical record. But we really wanted, the more we read this story and the more we researched it, and the more we talked to the people who were there, who were still living, the more we realized it's the story of the Atlanta movement that is so exciting. And a little later, you know, Paul got to interview people like Reverend Otis Moss and Charles Black and people that are still living. We didn't get to interview Wyatt T. and Julian Bond. They died just as we approached them. But we spent hours with Lonnie King, head of the student movement, who's not a relative of the Kings, but was a neighbor friend, and Harris Wofford, who was the essential link between JFK and Martin Luther King, which always was going to prove to be an uneasy tie. But he was the person that brought them together.
I want to just talk about then the political context of all of this. So King gets arrested weeks before the 1960 election, this race where John F. Kennedy is running against the incumbent vice president, Richard Nixon. This is 1960, so it's, you know, full 10 years before Nixon becomes, as president, faces the Watergate scandal. But what is the, and tell me about the motivations from the Kennedy campaign to reach out to Dr. King's allies and intervene, which is what it sounds like they did, to help free him. Was this something that was obvious to them, or was this seen as an important political act to take in order to revive their campaign and attract Black voters?
It wasn't an obvious act at all. And in fact, really both campaigns had talked very little about race. And if the students were making a bet on who might speak out in to help King, most of them assumed it would be Richard Nixon. Daddy King had endorsed Nixon the day before his son's arrest. But that's not the way it all worked out. And the reason why was a team of Kennedy civil rights staffers, Sergeant Shriver, who was in the Kennedy family, and Harris Wofford, who I just mentioned. And really kind of the hero of our book is Louis Martin, the Black godfather of Black politics. And he is a fascinating character, often left out of the historical record. I think we're very happy in this book to be able to give him his very proper due. And the three of them really worked together, and they helped motivate the Kennedy campaign to move. I think they would have done nothing had these three civil rights staff members not gone rogue. They were mavericks who, in a sense, forced the campaign to move.
And it's remarkable to think about it. In 1960, you have a presidential race and they are trying not to talk about racial justice. I mean, this is very, you know, the civil rights movement is in full swing at this point, right?
Yeah, well, we had to take the reader back into an unfamiliar time. So at this point, Black Americans were looking like it might be about equally split of whether they would vote for Nixon or for Kennedy.
Which seems so strange now to think about that.
Yeah. So, and the other side of the race is that there were Black advisors to Nixon who are following him all over the country, trying to get him to speak up for his friend, Martin Luther King. But he was eyeing the white South, and he thought he could flip white voters who had voted for Democrats in the past, whereas Kennedy was thinking of Black voters who had voted Republican in the past, especially in Atlanta, like the King family. And so as you see in the story, Kennedy and his brother Bobby end up doing some very politically courageous things. This was a leap into the electoral unknown, and they did the decent thing, but it was they were forced into the situation by this interracial audacious trio who really believed in the power of Black voters, and the Black voters mattered, and who really forced the issue. And once they were involved, then the Kennedys were inclined to solve the issue. Then they were like, all right, well, we don't want just a gesture. We want to get this thing solved, get King out of prison. But it was really this vision that particularly the Black Staffer, Louis Martin, but the three that worked so well together, Shriver and Wofford, really understood that Black voters could be the difference in a number of key states. And in this close election, they ended up helping Kennedy have a narrow win, and it reshapes our politics that are still with us today.
Right. So what were the actions that were taken in order to free Dr. King then? And how were those actions publicized? How did the Kennedy campaign use them to make the case to Black voters?
Well, they did and they didn't. When the trio went rogue, they were told by Bobby Kennedy to do nothing more. Don't do anything. Essentially, you're on the sidelines. But Louis Martin and Harris Wofford sought the permission of Sergeant Shriver to quietly, on the down low, to get out what this historians call the blue bomb, over 7 million copies of a sheet of paper that described how the Kennedys had reached out and Nixon had been silent. And basically, this went out to Black barbershops, Black churches, institutions all North and South. And it made a huge difference. And his political historians think about 7% of the Black vote shifted in about a week.
Wow.
Just immediately before the election. And that's probably what elected Kennedy.
And it was
create the world we know today.
And Louis Martin had come from the Chicago Defender. So he comes from the world of Black newspapers. And so he was really very thoughtful about how he could get a message to Black voters that white voters would never focus in on. He would say it could have been written in Chinese for all they know. So he wanted to tell this narrative of what Kennedy did for his for this leader, Dr. King, and what Nixon didn't do. And so he did that through this pamphlet. But even before that, even before the 9 days, they had been putting on civil rights convenings. They had been trying to make outreach be more substantive and be about civil rights issues, not just celebrities or handing out money locally. So they really did have a very modern vision for a campaign that was groundbreaking. But then during these 9 days, it begins because Harris Wofford had been a nonviolence advisor to King. My father referenced their relationship. So he starts with getting involved. It begins with him calling the mayor of Atlanta, calling a friend of the mayor of Atlanta that gets to the mayor of Atlanta. That begins the intervention that ends up getting the Kennedys publicly into this because suddenly their campaign is involved. And Coretta King had called Harris Wofford because, again, she had spent time with him. They were friends, saying that King was going to be killed if something wasn't done. And so that's really how the intervention started. But then Louis Martin really wanted to make sure their campaign got credit for helping get King out of prison, and it reshapes our political party.
So is that the turning point then where Black voters tend toward Democratic candidates? I mean, I understand Kennedy won something like 68% of the Black vote, which by today's standards is low. And does it also then cement Kennedy's legacy as a backer of racial justice?
Well, it takes a little while. I mean, continuing pressure from King and our trio who served in the Kennedy administration. So that by the time you reach Birmingham, yes, Kennedy has now solidly moved into the camp of supporting civil rights. But it was a long, slow journey. But it's what's, when you set up the story earlier, in a sense, Nixon got what he wanted and the Kennedy folks got what they wanted. They were able to shift the Black vote towards the Democratic Party. And that's true today, as you noted. And Nixon, in a funny kind of way, lost the presidency but got what he wanted, because he created the Southern Strategy, which still exists for us today. When you saw that guy parading a Confederate flag in the Capitol, the Southern Strategy still is very much in play in our modern politics.
But it's King gives us a lot of lessons that Black voters chose Kennedy, and then King and folks like Louis Martin really, as we must do today, kept the pressure on the politicians to deliver the civil rights legislation. Okay, live up to this. So I think that's a key piece. The Black voters, it was, you know, people at the time said no white politician had ever done something like this, to call Coretta King, the wife of this controversial minister, express sympathy. You know, that was, so it was a signal to Black voters that Kennedy was going to be more decent, but you know, legislation was still needed. And so that's still an instructive battle for us today, to make sure that things that are done in the campaign are not just in the campaign, but really translate into, you know, the bold change then in what might be politically risky later, but is morally right.
So let's talk about how Dr. King and the civil rights movement used Kennedy's actions to make demands of the party. What was the dynamic between party politics and the grassroots civil rights activists and leaders following the 1960 election?
I think it's exactly the way it is today, which is activists get on the ground and make some noise, and politicians reluctantly follow. Sometimes politicians are even very clear. They'll say, please put pressure on me. I can't actually move unless you are moving. And I think that's really illustrated in the relationship that King had, not only with Kennedy, but, you know, obviously LBJ to follow. And it's really interesting because, you know, the Kennedys are now seen almost as civil rights saints. But the reality was they didn't grow up that way. In the 1960 election, Kennedy was not perceived as being particularly sympathetic to civil rights. So it, again, as we said, it's a long, slow journey, and these 9 days are a crucial turning point to that. What we tried to do in writing the book was write, in a sense, a political thriller, but what we were really hoping to do is to lift up a politics that could include decency and moral courage. What we've been through in the last 4 years has shown us that there's not only a thirst for it, but we desperately need it. And we received the contract for the book about a week after the election. And
of the 2016 election?
Yeah. So it's no surprise. Yeah. The editor said, you know, I'm hungry to find something that's positive and something that's powerful in terms of upholding political decency.
And there's some crucial lessons for activists. I mean, one, in the election, that the student activists forced the issue of civil rights. The politicians didn't want to talk about it, but King, you know, they want King to get arrested with them so that it's a national story. We need people to focus in. And then King, by doing what was uncomfortable for him, what was scary, reasonably putting his life on the line, he's able to go to Birmingham and go to jail there, where he created a moral theater that Americans watched and were shamed, and hearts change, minds change, and that gives the politician Kennedy the environment where he can really get behind the civil rights legislation that Louis Martin is pushing him on. But Americans had to, you know, activists had to force the issue and had to help people see these issues in a way that was sympathetic to them and made them understand the moral stakes. And so King was a genius at that. And we wanted to show the path of his activism, because that speaks to us. But then also this theme speaks to us of how to work together across racial lines in ways that really empower, as Wofford and Shriver did to Louis, because he understood, you know, ultimately how they were going to reach Black voters.
Well, I want to thank the two of you very much for joining us today and sharing this book with us. Good luck to you with it.
Thank you
so much for having us.
My guests have been Stephen and Paul Kendrick, a father-son team who have co-authored several books. Their earlier books include Douglas and Lincoln, Our Revolutionary Black Leader and a Reluctant Liberator, Struggle to End Slavery and Save the Union, as well as Sarah's Long Walk, The Free Blacks of Boston and How Their Struggle for Equality Changed America. We've been discussing their new book called 9 Days, The Race to Save Martin Luther King Jr.'s Life and Win the 1960 Election. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.